Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with this year's Ketchikan-Gateway Borough Assembly candidates. Joining me in the studio are Glenn Thompson, Mike Painter, and John Harrington. They're running uncontested for the Assembly, so unless someone files as a write-in candidate before the local election, they will win their respective races. If you have a question for our candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, let's have each of you introduce yourself and say why you're running for local office. We'll start with John Harrington.
Well, I'm John Harrington, and I've been involved in borough politics now for, 12 years, 15 years, something like that. North Tonga Service Area Board, service on the two terms on the Borough Assembly, service on the Planning Liaison and Economic Development Advisory Committee, being an advisory person on economic development to the Assembly, working on the Planning Commission. It just seemed logical. It was time to get back on there and do what I could. Thank you.
Okay, great. And Glenn Thompson.
Good evening, Glenn Thompson. I, too, have been in local government for a number of years. Got my start with the Consolidation Commission back in 2003, I think it was. And we spent a year trying to put a consolidation charter together for to combine the city and borough that was unsuccessful for the fifth time. And after that process, decided to jump in. You know, every once in a while, the superstar has to put down his beer and hot dog and come out of the stands and play. So if you're going to complain on Monday morning, you should plan to play on Sunday. So I decided to throw my name in the hat for an assembly seat and won it. And have been here for now. This is the end of my third term. And I was thinking about hanging it up again. And like James Harris with the Pittsburgh Steelers, my fans and friends and family called me back and said, no, you need to run one more time. So that's why I'm here. It's, you know, it's quite flattering and it's quite an honor to be elected to office. Anyone who tells you otherwise is probably not being quite honest. You know, being a leader in the community, and that gives you a certain amount of charge, you know, a little jazz to your step. But it's also a lot of work, and I think I bring some experience having worked now for about 9 years with the borough, very familiar with its finances, with the issues in front of it, and hopefully we'll be able to just stay the course as we go into the next 3 or 4 years. Thanks.
Thank you. And Mike Painter.
Good evening. I, like my cohorts here, have been in local politics for quite some time, starting out as a service area board member, Shoreline Service Area Board, and Charter Commission also with these guys, and just finished up my third term on the Borough Assembly. Glenn and I were the second and third assembly members that were termed out, and we sat out a year, ran again, got reelected, and so here we are. I'm a 46-year resident of the community, small business owner. Raised my family here. I'm a member of the SARA, Southern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association Board. And I'm here running for Borough Assembly for my final time, which will be my fourth term. I feel that, you know, I, like my cohorts here, we're well-versed, well-experienced with the budget and the functions of the borough. I think we can all three take pride in the accomplishments that we've been a part of. One of the biggest things that I think we can all hang our hat on is when we were all first elected several years ago to the Borough Assembly, the millage rate was, I believe, 7.3 mills, and today it's 5 mills. And the borough is in much better financial condition today than it is than it was then. And that's about all I got to say.
Okay, great. Thank you. And my first question for each of you is, what will your top priorities be on the Assembly over the next 3 years? And this time we'll start with Glenn Thompson.
Well, over the next 3 years, that's an awful long time frame. I think that we need to stay the course in watching our shekels and making sure that we are very careful with our finances. And I think that that goes all the time. But I think over, say, the next year or so, I would like to see us develop a little bit better rapport with the school board and get past some of the issues that bogged us down in this last budget cycle. The borough acts as one of the main funding agencies of the school district. We also act in an oversight capacity in terms of their overall appropriations. And, you know, the two sometimes get conflated and conflict with each other. And so it causes some confusion and also some consternation between the two boards and the two bodies. And I'd like to see us somehow bury the hatchet and get back to doing the job that we need to do, and that's fund the schools appropriately and continue the education for our children that we're doing. I think the schools in this town, and there was an article in the paper, I think yesterday or today, that shows that we have really good schools in this community, especially compared to a lot down south and across the rest of the state. So they're doing a pretty good job, and we just need to continue that. And I think we can get past some of the rancor and get down to work.
Thank you. And Mike Painter?
I agree with everything that Glenn has said. I think we need to maintain the status quo as far as borough operations and spending. Try to keep government sprawl at bay, and that's sometimes a challenge. And I think the relationship between the school board and the assembly needs a little bit of improvement. You know, we all live in this community. We all want to have the finest schools that we can afford to have. You know, and it's a matter of we, you know, fund the local contribution at the required amount set forth by the state. I believe it's 2.65 mils minimum. And but then we can't tell the school board how to spend that money if the assembly doesn't agree with, you know, a program or function, you know, equipment or whatever. We seem to have been at loggerheads on several issues, and I think, you know, we need to try to do a better job of doing that. But that's about it.
Okay. And John Harrington.
It's obvious the three of us have been spending much too much time together over the few years. First thing I thought about was the school district borough assembly relationship. Obviously, it is important to all of us, including me, and it does need some work. But I'll try to avoid saying me too to the rest of these guys. Say there are a couple of other areas. I think looking back at the last couple of years of capital requests going into Juneau, it looks like we could use a little work on relationships between Saxman and Ketchikan and getting a little more cohesive thing moving forward there. I think there's some, backing up a bit, as I look back over the last 8-10 years, the change in borough staffing, the change in administration, the change in department functioning has been incredible. We still have some work to do. But we have, it's so much better now than when I first got on the assembly. Dan Bockhorst has done a marvelous job. We've got some real strength in most of our departments. I think there's a couple that we probably should take another look at. I'm not going to say who, what, or where, but I think it's worth reviewing that. Finances. We have to keep close tabs on it. And I think some of the things that we have institutionalized over the years, such as our party up there in Juneau, it's probably time to take a long, hard look at that and say, are we in this time when Juneau is spending a whole lot more money than they're taking in, is it really appropriate for us to be asking for a huge amount of money and throwing a party up there for everyone to try and entice votes to give Ketchikan more money? I think we can be a little more frugal and be a little more appropriate and make sure our requests fit the needs of us and fit the needs of Alaska. economic development is always a key. I know we're just about, if not out of economic development money, we're getting real close. And before we finally terminate that, I really would like to try a couple more items just to see if we can be working with the businesses in this town to improve and increase the revenue stream and make this more economically viable community and build up the health of the community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And you each mentioned relationship with the school board, which was my next question. It does, from the public's perspective, seem to be rather dysfunctional. And do you have any solutions to propose to fix or at least improve that relationship? And this time we'll start with Mr. Painter.
I think one thing that has helped things in the past, but it has not been consistent, is to have a joint meeting with the school board prior to budget. And we have not done that every year. I think that's something that should, you know, should happen, you know, so that, you know, nobody likes surprises, and so that we can, you know, try to work together on it. In addition to that, the borough for quite some time has had an annual planning session, usually in January, and the school district superintendent is always there, but there's not very good attendance by the school board members to, you know, participate in the planning of, for the future, and so I think, you know, that would be important, you know, to help things out. The other thing is, you know, people need to keep the personal comments, you know, a little bit at bay sometimes, because sometimes things get reported by the media and it kind of riles things up. But there's lots of room for improvement. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Harrington.
I think one of the keys to develop, well, the budget is the main issue. Second issue is understanding the roles each of us play. And the fact that the borough has one expectation for the budget and the school district has another expectation for what's in the budget, we need to make sure we're talking the same things, apples and apples, oranges and oranges, and not the cross kind of communication that we've had. And I think that is probably fairly easy if we can sit down with them and devise a format that the budget can be presented to both them and to us, and it's the same dollar amount. I mean, the difference between what the borough sees the budget as this year's $48 million, and the school district thinks of it as 30 or 37, depending on how they deal with it. That really is confusing to people in the public. I will not and never will try to attempt to describe and tell you how the school district budget is. It is mind-numbing to try and go through and figure out how they get the money, where they get the money, and how the process works. I've dealt with it for too many years, and I still, every time, I have to go back and try to figure out, now, what are those terms? Where is all this coming from? And I think so if we get the format the same so that everybody can be working off the same page, that'll help. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Thompson.
Oh, I would like to follow up on what John's suggesting. Take a little bit of a trip into the weeds, if I might. In this last funding go-round, he mentioned the $48 million versus the $31 million versus $37. And it really depended on how you added up the numbers in as to what the total amount of appropriation the borough was authorizing the school district to spend. The school district's operating budget, the core operating budget of high schools and elementary schools, et cetera, buses and that sort of thing, was $30 million. On top of that, the state pays into a fund for teachers another, I want to say, $10 million, $9 or $10 million. And on top of that, they get some federal grants for certain items. There's I think there's several large grants that they get, and those are a program that they fund with those. So when you add all that up, it comes to $48 million. So when we get to the end of our process, we have to go to the school district and say, you are authorized to spend $48 million. Now, backing up a little bit, they want to confine most of the conversation with regards to the budget to their operating budget. We somewhat do the same on the borough level. We don't really focus on a lot of the tertiary funds. We focus on the general fund and a couple of others. And so that's the one that they've been focusing on. When we start talking in terms of the budget back and forth, that's where some of the confusion comes into. We would like to see something that just says, okay, everything adds up to the 48 and we can move things around on the page. The other thing that happened this year that didn't happen in the past is the school district would formatted their budget in such a way that they could show us the programs that they were able to fund depending on how much money they received from the borough as a local above and beyond the local contribution. And so we could see on their page roughly what they were looking at that said, if you fund us a little bit more, we can do this. And if you don't fund us this much, we're going to have to cut this. And those are the types of decisions that the borough, when we look at what we can afford and what we can live within, we say, well, we've got some reserves. Maybe we can kick a little bit more in, or it's really tight this year. Can you guys put that off till next year? We didn't have that this year. And so it was really difficult for us to determine, was the amount that we're giving them enough? Can we get a little bit more? And so it was a little bit fuzzy. So I think at the end of the day, they have a form they have to fill out to present to DEED, the Department of Education and Early Development of the state. We're happy with that. We could work within that. But we're also going to have to find a framework so that we can see how much, if we gave them a little bit more, if we gave another $300,000, gave another $500,000, what could that pay for? What programs are we having to give up? And we can then take a look at our finances and say, well, we can probably go a little bit more, or maybe we can't. I've always had the policy since I started on this assembly that we need to fund schools to the maximum amount we possibly can without raising taxes. And so far we've been able to do that, and we have some pretty substantial reserves. So if we can look at what some of the needs are and plan 2, 3, 4, or 5 years down the road, we can look at that. We did some other things this year. For instance, we took the unexpected timber receipts money and we put it into a reserve for the school district so that we have a fund that we can tap if there's an emergency. And so that's the type of things we've been trying to work with. And I think within that framework, we can come up with a process that works for everybody, that we won't be micromanaging their budget, because as Mr. Painter pointed out, once we give them the money, it's theirs to spend. But we can identify, this is how much we can afford from a borough standpoint to give you, and we're going to overall give you an authority to spend this much and go train our kids and educate our kids, because that's your job.
Okay.
And that was a little bit long, but
thank you very much. And I would like to remind listeners that this is a call-in show, so if you have a question for our borough assembly candidates, please call 225-9655. And continuing the topic of education funding, I believe you're all on record on this, but we'll make it official. Do you support the borough's lawsuit against the state, and why or why not? And this time we'll start with Mr. Harrington.
Well, since I am one of the principal people that are suing the state, I guess you have to say, yes, I'm in favor of this lawsuit.
Why or why not?
We need to get this resolved. Okay, I'm going to step back from my previous borough assembly, school board, and talk about local boundary commission. And that is, I said, the last 5 years I've served on the local boundary commission. And what you see when you go out into the communities is people resisting becoming a borough, resisting becoming part of a borough. Why? Because of the penalty of taxes. We have areas in this state that need a borough desperately, but won't be, and have good tax, more taxable property than the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, but refuse to become a borough. And even some of them have outside sources of funds so that they could function quite nicely, even much better than we do, but they still don't want it because of that tax burden. It needs to be settled. The state needs to be treating all Alaskans equally, and they're not. And for that, that's my sense of what this is about. And I think if we could get to the point where, assuming we win, that it becomes a level playing field, then the borough has would have the flexibility to probably fund the school districts at a much higher level than we currently are. And that's, I see a side benefit. That's not my primary reason for it. I think it needs to be resolved.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
Yes, I am in favor of our lawsuit. I've been staunchly in support of it since we made the decision to go forward with an attorney. And my reason is strictly, I'm quite a constitutionist, and I think that there are some constitutional questions raised by the statutes that we are currently living under that need to be answered. John brought up one of them, and I agree that is the idea of equity, and the borough formation issues are very important ones. They were attempted to be raised by the Mat-Su borough about 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And it's actually set a kind of an interesting precedent, because it established at that time that the borough doesn't have standing to sue the state over issues with regards to the school districts, because the borough at that time was considered to be a political subdivision of the state, and you can't sue your parent. But they never answered the question, because it never got that far. They were denied standing. It never got that far to talk about the equity. This lawsuit actually looks at it from a little bit different angle that Mr. Bockhorst had brought up, that the required local contribution from the state actually violates state law, because it creates a dedicated tax. And you're requiring some people to pay into a fund that it's dedicated to a state purpose, which is against the Constitution. And since the legislature doesn't annually appropriate it, that also violates the Constitution. And since the governor doesn't have the opportunity to veto it on an annual appropriation basis, that also violates the Constitution. And so there are lots of different constitutional questions that arise around this thing. I don't think anybody's expecting that local communities aren't going to fund their schools. Actually, it is my opinion that if the local contribution that we're required to pay, which is approaching $5 million a year, went away and the state funded that portion that they've foisted off onto the local boroughs, the organized boroughs, we would have a lot more money to fund to the legislative cap. And so actually our schools would have more money to play with. But at the end of the day, what made me want to pursue this was to have the courts decide, and it probably will wind up at the Supreme Court, have the courts tell us whether or not what they've done is constitutional, because it'll be a landmark decision, I believe, when that happens.
And Mr. Painter?
Yes, I'm in favor of the lawsuit. I believe that it is an unfair tax mandated by the state, but it's only mandated for organized boroughs or school district outside of an REA, Regional Education Authority. There are communities that have fine education systems that are entirely funded by the state. And I firmly believe that it's unconstitutional to penalize organized boroughs to provide the mandatory local contribution. There are areas of the state that are, they have abundant resources and abilities, potential tax mechanisms in the rail belt that refuse to form an organized borough, simply as Glenn stated, because of the penalty of the taxation. I think we have made waves with this lawsuit. Like John mentioned, it's being discussed within the local boundary commission. just in the borough emails the other day, it was reported to us that the Fairbanks North Star borough paid their local required contribution to the state under protest, and we will again this year too. So that'll be 2 years. And so if we're successful and the courts decide, it will be retroactive. And I fully expect this to go to the state Supreme Court. Our legal team is taking a little bit different whack at the pinata rather than has been done in the past with Matsubara, and I think our chances are much better than anybody has ever done. We had some very, very smart minds that have led up to this. The two-volume report that was written by Bob Hicks was very good reading material and really opened up your eyes and very convincing. So,
Mr. Thompson?
Just to clarify what Mr. Painter mentioned, the dollars that are involved here and whether or not they'll actually come in as damages, one doesn't know. The courts are, it's hard to say what the court will do. But Fairbanks North Star Borough joined our lawsuit in an amicus brief, and their local contribution is $29 million a year. And so that combined with almost $5 million a year for us, this is upwards of a $40 million lawsuit at this point in terms of the dollar. So if we get some other communities that join as an amicus situation, that number could go up substantially. I think the number for the state, if they had to fund all the local contribution right now, is about $270 million a year. So the administration is also quite well aware of this, and they're scrambling. Not only are they scrambling in terms of what this local contribution might mean in their operating budget, but also the fact that their operating budget is getting so tight right now too. So there's education funding is going to be the bee in the bonnet probably for the next couple of years at the state level.
Thank you. And I am going to change topics somewhat. But in addition to the relationship with the school board, there have been times when the borough's relationship with the city has been somewhat at odds. And I was hoping that you could have some suggestions on how that relationship can improve as well. And this time we'll start with Mr. Thompson.
Well, our relationship with the city is an interesting one because while some may perceive that there's a lot of animosity there, we do cooperate in a lot of ways. We just did a $200,000 grant for Hole in the Wall. We did $2.5 million for the Whitman Lake project. So we work cooperatively in a lot of ways with the city. I think the last issue that came up that was a controversy between the borough and the city, and it likely may come back again because I intend to raise it at the planning session, is the level of funding that the folks living outside the city limits pay to the city coffers. There's a non-area-wide mill rate of 0.7 mil for the library, and that was characterized by a lot of constituents that showed it at our table as some sort of an attack on the library, which it was not. It was really an attack on a tax that's been around for 25 years. In light of the fact that the city raised their sales tax 0.5 cent and the people living outside pay a large portion of that, there's about $3 million that the people living outside of city limits pay into the city coffers that basically don't receive any services for those. There are a lot of services that the city provides that the people living outside get a benefit for. The library, the civic center, and the museum come to mind. So the question becomes, how do those get paid for? What is the responsible amount or a reasonable amount that folks outside should be paying, and what's the mechanism to do it? The people who pay KPU, which is everyone on the island, pay through their electric fees. They pay a pilt to the city from KPU. So there's a lot of intercompany accounting that goes on between the city and KPU that all the ratepayers pay. And yet people living outside of town have no say whatsoever in KPU as well. You know, KPU funds the community grants system. So that's not being funded solely by the city. It's now been spread to the area-wide basis. So there's a conversation that needs to be had in terms of some equity funding, and I think that's really where a lot of the friction comes in. In a lot of other ways, the city and the borough work quite well together. And I would hold up the Whitman Lake project, the Hole in the Wall project. We may be doing some more CPV funding, joint funding with the city, for instance, on the Thomas Basin seawall. So I don't think it's all, you know, animosity, but there is some, definitely some friction there.
Thank you. And Mr. Painter?
Very good question for an assembly member that is just finishing up his year as a joint borough-city cooperative relations committee member. The borough has been very cooperative with the city, in my opinion. People forget or don't realize that even city residents are borough residents. And of course, all of the powers that the borough, has vested, go along with city residents also. In the past 2 years, the borough has assisted the city in various different projects with funding, grant funding, to the tune of over $5 million. As Glenn mentioned, the Whitman Lake Hydro, the drive down ramp, the harbor carts, the net float renovations, the Thomas Basin bathroom, and I could go on and on. But the point that I try to make as a committee member, or have tried to make as a committee member, it's a two-way street. I live in the Shoreline area, which was annexed by the city of Ketchikan. We have no sewer. We have no water. I mean, we have on-site systems. And we have, you know, I'm just using this as an example. We have, we don't have the benefit of being in the borough's sludge program and have the benefit of paying your $45, well, it's gone up now. But anyway, it was $45 a quarter, $15 a month. And every 3 years, your tank gets inspected and pumped and so on and so forth. When a Shoreline resident, who's now a city resident, has to have their tank pumped simply because it's plugged up and nobody's been checking it and what have you, it's close to $1,500 between the contractor and the sludge fee, because the sludge cannot go to the city's plant. It has to go to the private contractor. It's quite a shell shock when that happens. And that was one of the things that I've, you know, tried to get happen with the Joint Cooperative Relations Committee. And it's been on their agenda for probably, I want to say, at least 8 months. And so far, every meeting, the answer is staff hasn't had time to do anything about it. So, you know, I think the borough has been very cooperative. And I just don't see the cooperation as well as what the borough has come forward. I mean, most recently, we had a deal with the new aquatic center and the driveway and the entrance and the school bus unloading at the Tong School of Arts and Science. We were kind of in a quandary, you know, in safety and what have you, with the kids getting off the bus. Initially wanted to have the thing down on Schoenbar Road, the pullout on Schoenbar Road. Well, that couldn't happen because the city had It was a water vault, wasn't it?
No, it was a cathodic system for their water mains, and the city's flat out told the borough that you can put it there, but you're going to have to pay to move the cathodic protection system, which would have cost probably $1 million or more. And anyway, we did resolve the issue. We put it on the other side of the school, and things are working out. But anyway, that's about it.
Mr. Harrington.
City Council, Borough Assembly Relations. Well, I don't want to repeat what these other gentlemen have talked about, but had my fingers in several of those issues. I just want to mention that this is a small community. The people that serve on the City Council are friends of all of ours. We get along. We do talk. We get out there. We discuss privately issues. I think a lot of the friction is more perception than reality. That may not be true on the level of the bureaucrats that run the two institutions, but as the two councils, I think we can easily talk and get along, agree on most things.
And never rule out some political grandstanding.
Oh, that's true.
And kind of on that topic still, what do each of you think about the borough taking over some services that are currently run by the city but are used by everyone, such as the library? There were some others that were suggested. And this time we'll start with Mr. Painter.
Oh, again, I got to fall back on my experience as a Cooperative Relations Committee member. That topic came up several months ago. And initially they had a sizable list. I can't remember. It was probably at least 10 items on there. It was narrowed down, I think, to two or three. Of those items that were offered up by the city for the borough to take over the powers were all in deficit operation. The one thing that was most surprisingly is they offered up harbors, not ports. They split ports from harbors because ports make money. Harbors don't make money. The library is in deficit operation.
Civic Center,
everything that they offered would have cost money from the general fund, which would have required for the borough to increase millage rate to sustain operations of those functions. And so it didn't go very far in the Joint Cooperative Relations Committee, and to the point that Agnes and I reported to the assembly, and it didn't go anywhere there either.
Thank you. And Mr. Harrington.
12 years ago, three of us were sitting on a committee in which we talked about all of the services of the city and all of the services of the borough and which one should go where and in any consolidated government. This is deja vu all over again as far as that conversation. I think based on what I've seen over the past, the only way it's going to work is on a step-by-step, piece-by-piece. You can't talk about several items. You have to talk about one. And if you talk about one, you have to talk about not just what the city will do in giving it up, what the borough will do with taking it over. How does that play out on the sales tax? How does that play out on all of the rest of the city tax structure issues? And I think picking any one of them, we could probably come to some sense of agreement. Take it over and move on. But that's not a short-term, temporary process. It's going to take a while.
And Mr. Thompson.
And I agree with both of these gentlemen. The taking over the city services and bank, for instance, this was suggested by Councilmember Olson, was, for all intents and purposes, stealth consolidation. And the voters have rejected that 5 times. I think we had a pretty good chance last time. We suggested, and what we had in our consolidation document, had projected the city to reduce its functions down to being a service area that provided police powers and fire and EMS and some of the things that were strictly city operations, and taking the remainder of those on an area-wide basis. But it completely changed all of the tax structures and all of the operations within both entities. And as Mr. Harrington says, if you're going to do that, you either have to do everything or you could do things piece by piece. But following along with what Mr. Painter said, most of the things that the city would like to, you know, unload, if you will, are in a deficit position. And I'm one of those people who, you know, really believes that it's a cause or pays, and it's a pay-as-you-go as much as we can in government. And so if you look at, for instance, the library, how that's funded, you know, should there be user fees? Should there be a tax base set up for it? Those are all questions that need to be answered. With the library, there's another little twist to it, because it's a brand new building that was decided upon by the city and voted on by the vote of the city voters to pay for. And then do we transfer that debt load to people who never got a chance to vote on it in the beginning? Actually, you don't have to do that. The people can continue to pay for the building they built, but the asset could be transferred over and operated by the borough. There's ways to do it, but whether or not the overall borough citizenry would vote for that, it's a real good question. I think that, you know, one of the things you have to look at is that I think, and this may sound harsh, but comparing the city and the borough's finances, the borough is in pretty good shape, and the city's not such good shape. I know that the mayor said that it's the most conservative council he ever worked with, and they're doing things, but they've done things like build a library and build a fire station and done some other things with bond funding without having an idea of where they were going to get the money from. When the borough went out and built a $23 million pool, which I happen to think was a little bit extravagant, we went to the voters and we said, we have enough money to do this, but if you do this, you won't have very many other projects for the next 50 years. And this is how we're going to pay for it. It's going to come out of an existing tax, and this is how it's structured, and this is how we're going to pay for it going forward. That didn't happen on some of these projects in the city, and now they're scrambling to figure out how they're going to pay for it. They've got 2 more bond issues coming up. So, you know, the overall community has $180 million worth of bonded debt for 15,000 people. That's a lot of debt. So those are questions that create some of these frictions and some of these desires to, you know, spread things out a little bit further. And there's some people living outside of the city limits who are like, maybe not.
Thank you very much. And we have a little more than 15 minutes left in this call-in forum. And if you do want to call in with a question, you can call 225-9655. And now each of you just mentioned consolidation at least briefly in that last answer, and that leads me to my next question, which is kind of an annual question for local candidates. What about consolidation? Is it a dead issue at this point? And this time we'll start with Mr. Harrington.
After having spent 2 years on that issue, and at that time I think we developed a very good document, a very functional document. But the ground rules have changed since then. Things have changed dramatically in debt structure and everything else. And I think it is a dead issue. I don't see how we can move forward in this current environment to consolidate. I would say yes. In my mind, it is a dead issue at this point.
Mr. Thompson?
Yeah, I tend to agree. The consolidation that we proposed 10 years ago was probably the closest that we would ever have come to agreement, because we had a pretty good buy-in from both the city government administration and the borough administration that this would work, and the local boundary commission that this would work. And at the 11th hour, the CPV head tax kicked in and threw us a $2 million curveball that we didn't have an answer for. If we consolidated, that money would go away. And so I really think that torpedoed it. But as Mr. Harrington says, things have changed. We told people back in 2003 that, you know, there are certain things in life that are certain: death and taxes and government growth. And in the case of this, it would have been a different path that we would have walked down had we consolidated 10 years ago. At this point in time, it's going to be very difficult to walk that same path because the finances have changed so dramatically. So in my mind, it probably is a debt issue. And also, if you look at the fact that in many other areas in the United States, you have county governments and cities within counties, and we may wind up with other cities within this county. But the counties have some overall broad areas that they work within, and the cities have things they focus on. In the case of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, we have three things that we're supposed to do: fund schools, collect taxes, and do planning and zoning. Everything else is optional, and since we're a second-class city, or borough, everything is voted by the electorate. So going down that consolidation path, we've been there five times. Somebody wants to step up and take a whack at the pinata, be my guest, but I'm probably not going to be one of them.
Mr. Painter?
Yep, been there, done that. Being an assembly member is a piece of cake. It's a walk in the park in comparison to being a member of the Charter Commission. We used to meet every Friday night. And we put all three of us and others put a lot of effort in it. We based our document, for the most part, on the mistakes of the prior attempts. And the most recent attempt was, you know, prior to our attempt, was with the city of Ketchikan. Understandably, the Charter Commission was an elected body. We had a special election to vote us all in, and we did get a considerable amount of help from both the borough and the city in you know, coming together with our document and the boundary commission. When it came to a vote, after the dust was settled, it was approved by the majority of city residents, and it was not approved by the majority of rural residents. And so as far as I'm concerned, I don't see it happening probably in my lifetime. I think there's just too many things and too many people that think that they like the way things are going now. You know, it's very similar to the lower 48 states, where you have county government, state government, county government, and city government, and it seems to be working there, and it's been working here, and they want to maintain the status quo.
Okay, and again, a question for, well, we have two sitting borough assembly members here and one planning commission member who has a tendency to attend all of the assembly meetings. So this question works for you as well. What do you believe is the biggest mistake the borough assembly has made over the last year? And what's the best decision that the borough assembly has made over the last year? And this time we'll start with Mr. Thompson.
Well, the biggest mistake we made was funding the loan for Oceans Alaska. And I could go into many of the reasons that I've pounded my shoe on the table about that, but it's unfortunately water under the bridge. The best decision we made, you know, that's kind of hard to say. I would say the best decision we made was probably the decision to keep the mill rate where it was at 5 mills, and realizing that we could do that, and we did. And we've managed to do that for several years in a row. And when we have stable taxes and low stable taxes, it's a benefit to everybody in the community. I've always believed that the best way to put your tax dollars to work is to leave them in your own wallet.
Mr. Painter?
I agree that this was within the past year.
Yes.
Within the past year, I think the biggest mistake that the assembly did was approve the loan to Oceans Alaska. That was a squeaker. Mayor had to break the tie, and it was very, very controversial. It's very risky. I don't like risking public funds when there's that much risk involved. And in fact, it was so risky that two proponents, previous proponents, assembly members of the program, at the last minute in the 11th hour, turned around and changed their votes. And so I think that was the worst mistake they made. The best thing I think the borough has done is you know, maintained all of the you know, services, the powers provided, you know, without, you know, keeping government sprawl at bay. And even though it didn't happen in the last year, but the White Cliff deal came out a really good deal for everybody involved. That's about all I can think of that comes to mind right now.
And Mr. Harrington.
Well, the best thing this borough assembly done is to keep Dan Bockhorst and Casey Paxton happy and, you know, and employed and working for the borough. Those two are the backbone of our borough, and I'm glad that this previous borough assembly has kept them happy. And I don't want to criticize the borough assembly for anything that I haven't involved in, but the things I have been involved in, they made some real mistakes when they turned down some of the stuff the Planning Commission sent them. But, you know, that's serious errors, judgment on both of those things. But I'll leave it at that.
How would you have voted on the Oceans Alaska issue?
Oceans Alaska, actually, I was a big proponent of shellfish mariculture. I pushed that for years. I mean, years and years. I pushed the borough assembly into raising the first capital appropriation high enough on the list of our capital to Juneau so that we could fund Oceans Alaska for $300,000 for their mariculture equipment. And as I was doing that, I had been very clear. This was equipment-only budget. This was stuff to run a nursery. The nursery was never run, and the first thing they asked was to take some of the funds to run operations. And that soured me a lot on the process, but that was the previous board. And I actually just backed away from all of that. I did not see the documents that these gentlemen are talking about. I did not see any of that. So I really can't make an honest judgment on.
Okay, thank you. And so this is something that's been threatened a few times, and I'm curious to know, will the borough ever really give back the airport? And this time we will start with Mr. Painter.
I don't think the current sitting assembly, and I go as far to speak as the next 3 years, that we'll see that happen. I think we all struggle to, you know, keep user fees, you know, as low as we can. But yet, on the other hand, the airport's operated as an enterprise fund, and it's in deficit operation, and what we don't get from the state has to come from the general fund. And we've discussed this at length on the assembly level and with staff. And we may not all be happy with the way things are right now as far as users' fees and deficit operation, but I guarantee you, if we handed the keys to the state and said, here, have it, you run it, there'd be considerable fee increases. And, you know, we are, it's hard to compare Ketchikan International Airport's operation to any other airport in Alaska because we are the only state-owned, locally operated, leased and operated airport in the state.
And Mr. Harrington?
Phrase the question in a funny sort of way, but First of all, we are Ketchikan residents. We are all Alaskans. Right now, this borough is running the airport far more efficiently than the state operates theirs. We are taking a loss of roughly 16% of the funding over there. The state is kicking in about half of that loss. The state operates most of their small airports at 86% loss. That is, they are underwriting them at 86%. I think we have a seriously good argument to come to the state and say, we are far more efficient than you. Would you please make up the end of the $400,000 we're losing and let us continue to operate it in the efficient fashion we're doing? It makes sense for Ketchikan. It makes sense for the state of Alaska. And if we can't get reasoning, then I'm ready to vote to give it back. But I think there's enough logic behind our position that the state was going to have to say, you're right, it's better to fund you a little bit more to keep you whole and not let you run deficits than the current system.
And Mr. Thompson.
Well, I concur with what both of these gentlemen said. I think that one of the issues that we face with our airport that is unusual is the ferry. And, you know, we could talk about Gravina access for 30 years. Oh, wait, we have. The state is supposed to be coming up with a final environmental impact statement that we were promised to have released on Tuesday. They didn't say which Tuesday. And that's really in a lot of ways where we have an issue with our airport. You know, we just raised the airport fee $6 and we were on the, or two $6, and we were going back and forth to Southeast Conference last week, and I mentioned that saying, oh, it's not $5, it's $6. What? And we raised it again. You know, that's part of the deficit. I think that, you know, if we didn't have that ferry to run, I think that would really lower our costs. The other thing is that we have a contract with the state to operate the airport reserve. And in that contract, they're required to provide a certain amount of maintenance to the facility. And they're also supposed to help us if we're not required to operate it at a deficit. So Mr. Painter's accurate in that we do a better job than they do. And Mr. Harrington's accurate that logic would say they really don't want it back because it's going to cost them far more and we'll probably have less service at higher cost. So it's kind of Occam's razor. It's kind of a razor's edge there. We have to walk that fine edge and say, okay, you know, if you guys aren't willing to talk to us and help us out, then you might wind up getting it back and you probably don't want that. And we really don't want to do that either. But, you know, so that's probably going to be a tug of war for several years, and I think so far the administration has seen their way clear to give us some money to help fill in that hole, and we'll see how it goes on in the future.
Okay, and we do have somebody on the line. We don't have too much time left, so hopefully it's a easy question, and it is Don in Klawock. Don, are you on the line?
Yeah, it was a quick trifecta on the schools. Does the don't use it, you lose it funding exist? If it does, doesn't it incite wastefulness? And if not, why can't they just roll it into a slush fund?
And that's for schools funding? Is that what you...
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of programs have, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Okay. Hold. I will have each of you answer the question. And I believe John Harrington is up first for this one.
The way we've established the funding for the schools is they're allowed, I think, 5% of their budget to be carryover from year to year. So there is no fear of if you don't spend it, you don't lose it. It becomes part of the following year's budget process in that it becomes a carryover funds. And I don't believe recently that's gone above the amount that the district had authorized, but if it started that way, I'm sure the borough assembly would probably say, okay, we'll raise the limit so you can continue to carry it over. But
and I believe that the carryover was established because the schools used to have a big spending spree at the end of each year. So, okay, thank you. And Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And typically what happens is they start with that that budget, and then they create a new one. So when their budget comes out at the end of the year, they try to project some reserves into the future. And then if they actually wind up with savings, which they've managed to do over the last couple of years, those don't count against them in their next budget cycle. So that was something we tried to eliminate, was that hurry-up offense at the end of the season. In fact, this year they've actually got, I think, $16,000 projected right now as their reserves, and that's before we even do any kind of a true-up on the student count, which I think actually adds some revenue to their kitty.
And Mr. Painter.
Yes, I agree. Don, good question. The I believe it's been 3 years prior to that. If you don't spend it, you lose it. Attitude was prevalent within the Ketchikan-Gateway Borough School District. And there was always a spending frenzy at the end of the year for equipment and what have you. But I believe it's been 3 years now that by ordinance, the borough has allowed the 5% reserves to be carried over, and it's worked out quite well. But the thing about it is, and I've always said this, sometimes there are emergencies or situations that require unexpected funding, due to the weather, heating fuel prices. When push comes to shove, the borough is the school district's reserves.
Okay, and we're getting very close to the end here, so we'll have each of you give a quick closing comment, and this time we will start with Mr. Thompson.
I just want to urge everybody to get out and vote for whichever one of the three of us or our opponents you choose. That's kind of a joke. It really saddens me that so few people actually turn up to the polls to vote. And I would prefer that if you're not educated about the issues, don't bother to vote. But if you're educated, please get out there and make your voice known, because this is a republic and it's a democracy, and we need your votes.
Mr. Painter.
Yes, vote early, vote often, October 7th. And by all means, vote for me and my two compadres here. One of the challenges that I would like to mention that hasn't been discussed that we will be having to deal with is, I'm like John mentioned earlier, very proud of the staff that we have. That we've, all three of us have been a part of, bringing together. Our managers have got two more years to go, so we will have to experience wading through a list and interviewing people in the second year of our upcoming term. But anyway, by all means, get out and vote. Thank you.
Mr. Harrington.
Okay. I think that people ought to get out and vote. I think they have an opportunity this time to vote for Mr. Painter twice. They can write in his name for the city council as well. So,
I forgot about the write-in campaign.
Yes, Mr. Thompson and I are starting a write-in campaign for Mr. Painter for city council.
And you're allowed to serve on both boards.
That's right. Absolutely. So remember that. Write in Mike Painter for city council. Vote for him on the borough. Forgot what else I was going to say.
That's enough.
Oh, is it? Okay. Thank you for having us here.
Yes.
This has been fun.
Yes, thank you, KRBD. And
thank you.
And that wraps up this evening's Candidate Call-In Forum on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to the listeners who called in and to our candidates, Glenn Thompson, Mike Painter, and John Harrington, for participating in today's show. The municipal election is October 7th, so please remember to vote. Mr. Harrington
One
has a last
thing.
Word.
There's a gubernatorial candidate debate coming on at first of October?
Yes.
First October.
At noon.
Get out and listen. This is a critical election this year. You need to hear these two gentlemen talk. Okay, three gentlemen talk. Pardon me.
Well, two gentlemen and one woman.
Okay, let's talk about all of them. Anyway, we need to hear them all talk.
Good night, everybody.